Welcome to the Songs of Note podcast, where we talk about the songs we love and the stories behind them. I'm your host, Ryan Gregg.
Hey, this is Ryan. Thank you so much for joining me for the Songs of Note podcast. This is a cool Christmas episode we've got going here. Gosh, what a crazy year. First, thank you for listening. If you were listening to this episode, then I assume you've been around and you've listened before. If not, welcome. I'm glad you're here. But just a really, for what a crazy year in our world. It's cool. I was looking back at all the episodes that have been put out this past year, and I feel so grateful to have gotten to talk to so many great people and talk about music in so many different ways. And this episode is another extension of that. And so, first off, I want to say it's really been a goal to put out an episode every single week this year, and I've missed a few weeks, but overall have put out a ton of episodes. And so thank you for listening. I think I'm going to take a couple weeks of a break here and just gather some new interviews, get some new things going. I already have some coals in the fire for the new year of people I'm talking to that I think you'll be excited to listen to, but wanted to tell you there will be a break here for a few weeks. If you have not listened to episodes through now, there's just been a ton, and so you can browse those and listen to interviews on especially bands like the Beatles. There are a slew of Beatles podcasts that we've done on here, especially with the Get Back documentary. It is amazing. If you haven't seen it, it's on Disney Plus, and it's like 9 hours. It's so long, and it's incredible. That's an aside, so watch that if you haven't. One of the coolest things about this podcast has been the ability to reach out to people and talk to people about the product, the thing, the music that you hear. You put it on your phone, or you put it through your stereo, however you're doing it, and that's your connection, and it's to an inanimate object, right? And so what I've enjoyed about this podcast has been trying to reach out to people who know about that thing or have a direct connection to that thing, and then it changes it. And so in today's episode, this is the final episode of the year. This is the Christmas episode. When I was looking at what are my favorite Christmas songs, well, without a doubt, for me, it is "Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas." There's no other song it could be. It touches on such human elements, and it's such a real song. It's such a real song. Like, this is way too honest. I put it on yesterday. I hadn't heard it this season, and I put on the Frank Sinatra version, and I had to go pick up my son, and I put it on, and I started tearing up. I don't do that. I mean, it doesn't happen to me, and this is a song I've heard a million times, but he's talking about all this stuff that's so real and brings you back to your childhood and childhood memories and Christmas and just like incredible moments in your life that you will treasure forever. And this is a song that I will hear for the rest of my life, and you will hear for the rest of your life, because it's that popular and it's that well done. And so for this episode, what I want to do was try to talk to somebody connected to the writers of this song. And so the writer of this song is a man named Hugh Martin, and his co-writer is listed as Ralph Blaine. We'll talk about that in the episode. And it was written in 1943. And so this song has been around for a long time, and it still is so powerful. And I'll list some of the people who recorded it inside the episode. But for a song to hold up, to be that good, that universal, for it to still be that powerful all these years later, 80 years later, a song that was written 80 years ago and it's still moving people, that's incredible. So I reached out to the family of Hugh Martin, because he passed away in 2011, and I said, is there anyone who'd be willing to talk to me with the family, because I just love the song. I would love to tell any kind of insight into the story of the song. And I got a response, and through several emails and in a setup phone call, it happened. And I got to talk with Gordon Martin, and Hugh Martin was his uncle. And he talks about what it was like, what Hugh was like, in some of the stories about the song, and specifically where Hugh Martin was when he wrote one of the specific lines in the song. It was incredible. It was incredible, you guys. It was so cool. So I hope you enjoyed as much as I did. Clearly, I really enjoyed this, but this kind of stuff, it just makes it, it makes it so fun and enjoyable, and I hope it makes the song more meaningful to you, again, we'll have a couple weeks break here. So to you and yours, thank you for listening to the podcast. I hope you have yourself a Merry Little Christmas. I'm also going to put my recording. I did a recording of this song, an instrumental version I worked out. It was one of the first episodes I ever did in the podcast. And I talked about the song and I said how it was really difficult to play. And then I felt the challenge to myself that I wanted to make a recording of it. So I'm going to include my instrumental version of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas after the interview. So as soon as the interview ends, I'll go into that song. But hope you have yourself a Merry Little Christmas, and let's head over to the interview now. All right, Gordon, thank you so much for taking time to come on the podcast today. It is a real pleasure to get to speak with you.
Oh, thank you for having us. Always enjoy talking about what we call Uncle Hugh. So
that's awesome. Okay, so I need to know, first off, what is your relation to Hugh?
So Hugh was my paternal uncle. My father, who's also Gordon Martin, was one of three children. So it was Hugh, Gordon, and Ellen. And actually, Ellen, Hugh's sister, my aunt, was also a chorus girl on Broadway way back when, I think, thanks to Uncle Hugh. So my father was the lone holdout of the folks who were in show business, so to speak.
I love it. So do you know how did he get into show business and songwriting and stuff like that in the first place? Do you happen to know that?
I do, yes. So we're from Birmingham, Alabama, and he played the piano and was kind of a singer and, you know, a pianist. And he went to a place called Ramsey High School here and was, you know, just talented in that regard. Went to college for about a year and a half, but then decided to seek his fortunes in New York. Went to New York, got with a group a choral group, and they were called the Martins. Corny, so that's what they were called. He then somehow, and I don't remember the story of exactly how, met Kay Thompson. And Kay Thompson was a great, I think, vocal arranger and singer. And people may not know that name, but she also ended up being a children's illustrator. And she is the creator of Eloise. So the plaza, you know, at the plaza, Eloise was the little girl who grew up at the plaza, was probably patterned after Liza Minnelli, Judy Garland's daughter. So it all kind of comes back around, because obviously my uncle was very close to Judy Garland,
and
she sang his most famous song, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
Yeah, man, that's amazing. Okay, so do you remember what he was like? Hank, like I assume you spent some time with him through the years.
Yes, yeah, he was a character. He was your typical left-brained artist, very very soft-spoken, very humble. Mm. You know, only drank goat's milk. It was kind of a vegan, probably before vegan was cool. Always had trouble kind of keeping weight on. He was very slight and very, very, like I said, very soft-spoken, very sweet man. I don't think he ever owned a home. So he, you know, had an apartment in New York. He had an apartment in Encinitas late in his life. A family basically adopted him, Elaine and Fred, in Encinitas, California. Huh. And he lived with them for, I was probably, because he lived a good long life. So he bounced between California and New York his whole career. After Kay Thompson and doing, I think, Best Foot Forward was kind of his big break as far as the shows went. And then he was hired by MGM Studios to, you know, be a writer for the movies, and went out to California to work with people like Johnny Mercer and others. And that's when he got to do Meet Me in St. Louis.
So was that his first big break, or had he already been doing some writing and was getting popular, or what was the timeline there? Do you know?
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to remember. I think the Best Foot Forward was the one that he worked on first in New York that probably got his name out there as a composer. His longtime collaborator was a guy named Ralph Blaine. Mm-hmm. So my uncle was the composer and Ralph was the lyricist on a lot of them. Although late in his life, he kind of revealed that, you know, things like Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas and those, he did it all. He wrote he composed it and did all the lyrics.
Well, I was reading that and I thought, oh my goodness, how crazy. Now I know, like, especially back in the day, I'm sure publishing deals were set up differently, but gosh, that must have been so crazy to have written that. And I guess the Beatles did the same thing where they put two names on a song, even if one of them wrote it. But in this instance, it sounds like Hugh really wrote the whole thing and Ralph's name got added to it. And that came out late in life, or even in the past, what, decade or two, I guess, is if I read that.
I don't know if he got, I don't know. I think the story was that, and I've met Ralph too, and he was a great guy. And my uncle, I think, is very appreciative. I mean, of he was so mild mannered and so kind, and Ralph was kind of the you know, out there and very gregarious, very, you know, kind of promotional and things like that. So in that sense, they made a good team.
Got it.
And he credits Ralph with having him not give up on the melody of the song that ultimately became Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. So in that sense, he was instrumental. But in terms of actually, you know, writing the words or anything like that, he said, no, that was all me. So,
well, I love the story, and it was just the brief thing that I read, but was there some story like he had the melody written and he threw it in the trash can and it was Ralph who like brought it back up? Like, where's that thing that you wrote? Was it something like that?
Yes. So evidently they were in the different parts of the house and he had heard the melody and said, oh, that I really like that. And he said, yeah, I can't figure out how to close it, and you know, kind of gave up on it. And he said, do me a favor, you know, try it for you know, a dozen more times and see if you can figure it out. And indeed he did. The story I read, I don't think I ever talked about this, but my father had said this to a local paper here, that you know, the other big story is that the lyrics were very morose.
Yeah.
Originally. And so when he first presented it, they laughed. They thought he was joking. And he was just crushed. And he was very sensitive, like many artists, obstinate when it came to his creative, you know, product. Mm. And so he was going to, he said, no, I'm not going to change it. And Judy Garland said, I'm not singing that to Margaret O'Brien. They would think I'm a monster. And so he had a friend, I can't remember who that was, but a friend who said, look, you, this could be a great song and this could be a big moment. You need to give. And the studio executives had tried to talk him into it, and he didn't listen. And this person got to him and he ended up changing the lyrics and it, you know, became I guess it's the third most Christmas played Christmas song out there. And then Frank Sinatra called him later and wanted to change it again to make it. He said his album was called like Joy to the World or something. He said it's not joyous enough. So he said, well, you change it. He changed those lyrics, and my father said that, so the original lyrics were, until then we'll have to muddle through somehow, and he changed it to hang a shining star upon the highest bough.
Very different. Very different.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. He was willing to, well, one, it's interesting that Sinatra wanted the original writer's input to try to take it somewhere different, but it's also interesting he was able to craft something that, in my mind, that really elevates it to like a way more hopeful song than it would have been otherwise, don't you think?
Yeah, I don't know if ASCAP makes, you know, I don't think they can just make up their own lyric. Maybe Weird Al Yankovic can. So my father said that he thought of that line when he was walking along Highland Avenue, which is a kind of a historic area of Birmingham here that that they lived just a few blocks from. So that's how he came up with those lyrics.
Oh man, that's awesome. That's amazing. Well, it's been recorded by so many people through the years, and there's a list of great artists. But when Judy Garland was the first one to make it popular, do you know anything about how that interaction went? And aside from her saying she wanted some lines changed, and do you know if he was happy with the recording and how all that went down as far as him presenting it to them?
Yeah, that began really a lifelong friendship with Judy Garland, of course, who died tragically very young. But he actually was the accompanist for her, I'll say, comeback tour at the Palace Theater in 1951, when she did kind of a long series of programs, and she asked him to play the piano, and then she did her show at the Palace in New York. So they ended up being very good friends. He had an interesting, I mean, everybody from Carmen Miranda to Mickey Rooney was a very close friend of his. So he was, you know, in the grand scheme of things, he was a bit player to, you know, the names that we all know, but it's like Forrest Gump, you know, the kid from Alabama,
right?
And all these places at this funny times, kind of on the side, but had some relationship one way or the other with these folks.
Well, I love the part where you're talking about when he was walking through Birmingham and he came up with the line about the hang the highest star. Do you know anything else around the inspiration for any of the other lines, or did you ever hear any other things about why he wrote it, or what made him start thinking about this song in particular?
Well, originally, of course, it was trying to come up with a song for Meet Me in St. Louis, and when they would have to, you know, leave St. Louis to go to New York, and so that's how those original lines. Let me pull them up for you so we can. And so the original lines were, "Have yourself a merry little Christmas. It may be your last."
Man, heavy.
"Next year, we may all be living in the past." "Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Pop that champagne cork. Next year, we may all be living in New York."
Oh, how interesting. I didn't know that part. Very specific to the movie.
Yeah, so all that was very specific to the movie. And so that was the main inspiration, is trying to fit it into the movie. Of course, the other big ones from the movie were the trolley song, "Clang, Clang, Clang with the Trolley." Mm-hmm. And then the other one was "The Boy Next Door." And again, he credits Ralph with encouraging him to put the address in there, which was kind of a neat feature of that song. And I think Ralph suggested he change it from "trying clang, 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 said the trolley" to "clang, clang, clang, went the trolley." So all those little tidbits, you know, that they, you know, labor over every word, literally.
Well, when you knew him and when you interacted with him, did he ever talk about the song, or did you ever ask him about it? He sounds like a more reserved guy, so maybe he didn't.
He didn't. He was, you know, I can't even remember us talking about any of that. That's why I was doing, you know, he wrote his autobiography. It's called "Hugh Martin, The Boy Next Door." And I learned so much that I did not know from that, because we really didn't. Now, we did not see him that often, because he lived in California and we were here. My father talked to him on a regular basis and was his biggest fan. But with his their sister died early, I think at 49. So it was just the two of them left. So they were close in terms of getting along, but we're never together in the same space, you know, very often. So we did not talk about that. Late in life, he, I'll say it this way, but became very religious and actually wrote an entirely new version called Have Yourself a Blessed Little Christmas.
Oh, I didn't know that. Interesting.
Yeah, with, you know, religious lyrics and used to play the piano at a seventh, or the organ, maybe. I don't know if it's piano or organ, at the Seventh-day Adventist Church in California.
Cool.
That's how he met folks he lived with for, like I said, 20 years.
Wow. Well, you know, something interesting, and I don't know if you feel the same thing, but for me, I mean, you hear these songs your whole life, and you've heard this song your whole life, I'm sure, and it's a song that resonates somewhere deep. There's something deep about it. It's really deep, like where the things it stirs, because it's talking about family and loss and hope, and gosh, it just ties in the human experience, in my mind, into one song. But it is about Christmas, but it does not touch on the religious aspect, like you said, like doesn't bring in Jesus, it doesn't bring in Christ's birth, but it stirs all the things around it. So I'm very interested that he went on to write a different version of it as well. That's interesting. Why do you think people still resonate with this song? I mean, all these years later, like you said, it's the third most popular Christmas song ever. What do you think it is about the song that is universal?
Well, I do think, I mean, the melody is, and here's what he said, you know, back then. He said, after I went back into the dining room, closed the door, one word he said, talking about Ralph, struck in my mind, madrigal. He had said, I have a funny feeling about that little tune. It sounds like a madrigal. And he said, I picked up the script and leafed to the end and read the Christmas scenes. The phrase, have yourself a merry little Christmas, popped into my head, and it fit my melody. So maybe Ralph was right. I went back to the piano and started struggling to make it work. An hour or so later, I called Ralph in to hear the results. He thought it fit naturally into the script because Esther is very despondent at that point. So perhaps the lugubrious, I had to look that one up, lugubrious lyric I had written would be what they all wanted. Now, that was the original kind of morose lyric from there. I think it's the combination of I think it's mostly the music, but I think the lyrics are also, you know, integral to touching everyone in that special way that just, you know, not many songs do. And last, like this one has.
Well, that's certainly accurate. That's certainly the truth. Do you have any stories that people have told you through the years about it, or any memories of people who've said special things about, you know, what the song meant to them, or anything like that come to mind?
You know, not people not knowing the connection, and the one that I remember is not my story; it's his story. He was in World War II. He desperately wanted to serve, and he weighed about 98 pounds. And they ended up basically having him go over and do equivalent to USO kind of tours. But he was in a normal group, and the song came on the radio, and he said, "Yeah," I said, "I wrote that."
Oh my gosh!
The guy said, "Yeah, right." And I'm, you know, the Queen of England, you know. That was one of the funnier ones. I was with Michael Bublé spoke at a corporate event that I was at, and so I had a chance to talk afterward. And he did one of the, I think, the great rendition, recent renditions of that.
That's great.
And so that was a fun, you know, encounter. But
if you go
to Amazon Music or Apple Music and you type in that, I'd be hard pressed to find a story that's been done more times than that. I haven't actually ever, you know, tested it with White Christmas or something else, but it's got to be on there as being produced just about more than any other song ever.
Oh, Well, it's just one of my favorites. I'm going to list a couple. So I was just going through the list of famous people who have recorded this. And to me, this shows the list of like the long lasting effect of the song, because you have people like Frank Sinatra, who did the standard, that's the version that I am most familiar with, but Bob Dylan, Coldplay, Tori Amos, Garth Brooks, Whitney Houston, Ella Fitzgerald, Bing Crosby, James Taylor, Michael Bublé, like you said, so many famous people just putting their voice to the song that they love. So I love that so much. Is there anything else you think worth mentioning about Hugh or his life or the song that would tie in here?
I'm not sure that it was just one of those things. It's amazing how one thing can kind of change the whole trajectory of your life. I looked at the jacket of the book, and it says, you know, about the composer of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas and the trolley song. And that, you know, one moment, you know, has touched so many people over the years. And so you just never know, you know, what's going to do. It says, how a skinny kid from Alabama became Judy Garland's accompanist, almost got killed in the Battle of the Bulge, and wrote a much-loved Christmas song.
Wow.
Summed it up pretty well.
That's an amazing life in a nutshell right there. Oh, my gosh. That's great.
I did think about, didn't Michael Feinstein just pass?
Oh, that maybe. I'm not sure.
I hope I can kill him off, but if he's not, but if he is, he wrote the foreword, and he had a project as someone who really thought very highly of my uncle's music, and they ended up doing, or Michael Feinstein did an entire album of Hugh Martin songs because they're appreciated. And so pretty cool to have Michael Feinstein do an album of your songs because he thought they ought to get more play.
That is super cool. That is totally cool. Well, hey, Gordon, I just appreciate you coming on and be willing to talk today just out of nowhere. I know this was a little bit random just to be asking to talk about it, but it's been a real pleasure to get to hear these stories and get a little bit more insight into this song that I love and I know so many other people love as well. So thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Well, thank you for having us, and have yourself a merry little Christmas.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Songs of Note podcast. Be sure and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. See you next time.